The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Riley, Judge Sleater, Judge Bryan, the Honorable Denise D. Riley presiding. The first case this morning is 820-1043 in the matter of the application of United States Solar Corporation and USS Waterfowl Solar for a conditional use permit.
Good morning and welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. I know that you both are experienced attorneys and you know that you'll have 15 minutes with 5 minutes for rebuttal. This is being recorded, so please state your name at the beginning of your argument. And with that, we'll turn to Mr. Kelly.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, Timothy Kelly on behalf of the relator. This court should reverse the county's denial of the relator's conditional use permit because the two reasons for denial lack a legal sufficient basis or are without factual support. In these type of appeals, if the denial lacks a sufficient legal basis or factual support, this court will find that the denial is arbitrary and capricious and reverse. A county does not have a legal sufficient basis to deny a conditional use permit if the applicant satisfies the requirements established for issuance of a conditional use permit. A reason for denial has factual support if it's based on actual facts or actual experience.
Mr. Kelly, could I just ask you a question? As you pointed out, the specifications are in the ordinance. My question to you is, when I look at the reading of subdivision 7, I believe it is of section 17, the premise or preface statement says no conditional use shall be recommended by the county planning commission unless said commission shall find. When I read that, that suggests to me that at a minimum, those must be met. My question to you is, why could not the board, by the plain reading of that ordinance, come up with reasons that are not listed there as long as the facts and the law support it?
Well, the county has to operate within the confines of their zoning ordinance. And so I think really the most important section of this zoning ordinance is actually in Section 7, Subdivision 3.
Well, I understand that. My question actually kind of precedes that. I was just looking at the plain language of that preface. Would you agree with me that as worded, at least, the ordinance seems to suggest at a minimum you must have these before a request is made or is approved? That first sentence. Am I wrong about my interpretation of that?
I would agree that the applicant has to show that it satisfies those six standards in that ordinance provision that you cited. But Section 7 of the zoning ordinance, Subdivision 3, says that land in the agricultural district may be used for any of the following conditional uses. And then it says, refer to Section 17 for a description of the requirements for each of the conditional uses. And so how this should be analyzed is that first we need to determine, is this a type of use that is allowed as a conditional use, which under the county zoning ordinance, they treat solar gardens like this project as a conditional use. And then you refer to Section 17 for the requirements. So the county can't go outside of what's required in Section 17. They've already determined that this type of use is a conditional use that's allowed in the agricultural zoning district. And this really goes to why one of the reasons for denial is legally insufficient. I mean, they found or denied the conditional use because the property is considered prime agricultural soil. Now, that's not a standard in Section 17, Subdivision 7. And I think the analysis is actually more simple than having to go through that all of Section 17. If you go back to, again, Section 7, Subdivision 3, it says land in the agricultural zoning district may be used for any of the following conditional uses as long as you satisfy those requirements. So there's no restriction here on what type of land. It just has to be land that's in the agricultural zoning district. I mean, what they're doing is really trying to change the rules here on the applicant. They're saying, if you have land in the agricultural zoning district, you're eligible for a conditional use permit for a solar garden. See the requirements of Section 17. Even if you meet all those requirements, then now they're saying, well, you're not eligible because it's prime agricultural soil. And so they can't, and that's just not a determination of eligibility for a conditional use permit. They are adding a standard condition, however you want to describe it, to eligibility for a conditional use permit in this agricultural zoning district. And the regulations they've adopted simply do not provide them with that right to deny a permit because land is or is not considered prime agricultural soil. And so when you have an appeal with conditional use permit, you know, there has to be standards that guide the court's determination of whether or not did the applicant demonstrate it satisfied the eligibility, I'll call them, requirements for a conditional use permit. And this denial because it's prime agricultural soil has nothing to do with any of the standards in Section 17. They haven't cited to any. And the specific ordinance that deals with the agricultural zoning district says any land can be used for a solar garden as long as you satisfy the requirements of Section 17. And so I don't think the county is allowed to just come up with a basis that is not part of the ordinance. And, you know, they can't change what are the eligibility standards just to justify a denial. And, you know, the reason given down below was prime agricultural soil, you know, for the reason stated that I don't think that's a legally sufficient reason. And now on appeal for the first time, they are referring to subdivision one of Section 7. Again, that's not the reason they gave for the denial below. They can't come up with a new argument. And I think the best way to read the county's zoning ordinance is that they've decided that under certain conditions, if they're met, if requirements are satisfied, you can have a solar garden located in an agricultural zoning district. And the standard's not, well, applicant, you need to show whether or not it's prime agricultural soil. Because if that truly was the standard, then this project should never have been applied for or considered because it would have been a disqualifying characteristic from the beginning. But that's not what the standard is.
Mr. Kelly, what the other reason it was the, I think the phrase is concern for property values. And there was some reference to that both in the letters, I think they were submitted to the board. One of the commissioners made reference to, I think the statement he made was one cannot argue that this would not have an effect. What specifically do you find legally insufficient as to that reason, which is identified in the specifications?
Okay. Well, the specifications is not that someone has a concern about property values. It's that this conditional use will not substantially diminish or impair property values within the immediate vicinity. And so we're not held to, the applicant's not held to the standard to say, you need to establish that no one has any concerns about property values. But the standard is that you need to establish that this conditional use, if approved, will not substantially diminish property values in the immediate vicinity. And so the reason they gave doesn't mirror the standard they have adopted. And it's something less than the standard they have adopted. Because concern is, I think, considerably different than substantially diminish.
So, Mr. Kelly, it seems like part of the argument here was that there is some, I'll say, expert evidence about property values on one hand, but you also have the, I'll say, lay evidence, if you will, of the nearby neighbors. So the question, it seems for me, is it your position that when you're faced with conflicting evidence on this point, that you have to disregard at this stage, you have to disregard the statement of the lay witness, for lack of a better term, and instead only look at what the expert has said?
No, that's not our position. And it's not the case law establishes that under certain circumstances, the board can rely upon testimony from neighbors. But that goes to testimony that's based on actual facts or actual experience. And so, you know, the case that the county cited in this case is the Super America case, and where I think everyone knows what Super America is, but it's like, you know, a gas convenience store where they're applying for a conditional use permit to put in a new store. And one of the objections to that application was traffic congestion. And what the neighbors testified in that case was to their past and existing experience with traffic congestion near that proposed location. So the neighbors there were saying, look, we're already living with traffic congestion in this neighborhood or in this area. If you add this Super America convenience store gas station, it's just going to get worse. And so that's the kind of lay testimony that this court has allowed counties to rely upon.
All right. So then the question I think is, how is specifically is that different? If the neighbors in the Super America case are in many ways speculating about what an additional establishment would do to the traffic, how was that any different from, I'll call him, the lay witness or lay opinion evidence of the neighbor that this will affect property values? Is it just that you're saying there's a difference of degree, or is it something else, a difference in kind?
It's a difference in kind.
Right. That's what I thought you were saying. So if it's a difference in kind, then explain to me how this lay witness is not speculating in the same way that the neighbors in the Super America case were speculating about how a new establishment might impact traffic. They're not experts. They haven't done a study. So they're speculating in a way. It's their opinion.
Because they were already saying, we're living here and traffic's a problem. And so having additional use allowed that's going to have traffic, because obviously you're not speculating there's going to be traffic as a result of having a gas station, but that's going to get worse. Here we have a neighbor saying, I think this solar farm, I'm concerned about it. It's going to maybe affect my property values, but there's no basis for that. He doesn't say that. I have looked at solar farms in other areas. I mean, Mr. Kelly,
if the only difference, and this is the last question I think, and I'll stand up, but if the only difference is that the neighbor in the Super America case can attest to the levels of traffic at that moment that they're already struggling with, then what you're requiring the neighbor in this case to do is to have some experience with a solar farm in that neighborhood. And that doesn't seem to be, to me, a reasonable requirement when you're talking about the scarcity of solar farms or even a gas station. If you don't already have some statement about what traffic is doing, or in this case, what a solar farm would do to your property value, then you're saying we have to discount the neighbor. And I think that's a little bit too much of a or stretching the Super America case too far. Would you agree?
I do not, because you've got the actual experiences, which I've talked about. And then the neighbor can also look at, this is not the first solar farm that has gone in Minnesota. I mean, the relator here did not just state in its submissions, solar farms don't have a negative impact. They submitted reports on that. And so there's nothing stopping a neighbor from doing some due diligence.
Right, but neighbor in the Super America case, it sounds like from your read of that case, didn't say gas stations generally in the state of Minnesota increase traffic. That neighbor said, we already have a traffic problem, and this would presumably make it worse. So if you're making that the requirement, then you would have to have the neighbor in this case say, we already have a property value problem due to solar farms, and this would make it worse. And I think that's the part that's unreasonable.
Okay. There's no factual support for the neighbor saying, I think this is going to impact property values. They're just giving their opinion without any basis for that. Whether that's based on, you know, personal experience or on information they've obtained from somewhere else. And these neighbors express the concern. They've never said there'd be substantially diminished the property values. The county's own director of environmental services said, based on everything in the public record, there's no evidence of a negative impact between solar gardens and property values. And then we have the study from Chicago County and the national study. A layperson's opinion without having some basis in fact or basis in experience, that's where this court says, that's not a sufficient basis. You cannot just defer to a layperson saying, basically, I don't want this here because I think it might affect my property values. And again, the standard is substantially diminished. And what evidence is in there to say that this project would substantially diminish the property values except for someone expressing concern?
Thank you, Mr. Kelly. Your time is out. You'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose to use it.
Thank you.
For McLeod County.
Your Honor, Michael Young. I'm the McLeod County attorney. Last name is J-U-N-G-E. And McLeod is capital M-C, capital L-E-O-D. First of all, I would like to acknowledge that the facts as laid out, the issues as laid out by Mr. Kelly are straightforward, and we agree with what he has presented there. His arguments, we don't agree with. The standard of review in these types of matters is that county zoning authorities have wide latitude in making decisions on conditional use permits. And except in rare cases where there is no rational basis, it is the duty of the judiciary to grant deference to civil authorities. And that
Mr. is- Mr. Young, do you agree that a landowner whose application for a CUP has been denied has a lighter burden than one who challenges the approval of a CUP?
No, that's clear in the case law. But the realtor does have the obligation of showing that the adverse consequences that are laid out in the statute are not present. And the determiner of fact is the county board. So it's up to the county board to evaluate the credibility of the various witnesses and then make a decision upon that. And this case, it was not a clear case. And in fact, the initial motion of the county board was to approve the conditional use permit, and that failed on a 3-2 vote. The motion then to deny was approved on a 5-0 vote. So we don't.
Mr. Young, can I just clarify? As you were talking about the law, it seems like the cases all have use the similar phrase that if a conditional use permit satisfies all the specifications in the zoning ordinance, that it's essentially per se arbitrary and capricious if those are followed and yet it is disapproved. And in our case, would not those specifications be outlined in subdivision 7? And I think board members themselves, at least the initial moving board members, indicated that they've all been complied with.
And I agree that's what the initial moving board member said, but then he later voted the other way, and by he, all five of our commissioners are he's. So he ended up voting in the opposite way when it came time to disapprove. So I don't think that any of the preliminary discussions of point of view are final until the final vote is taken.
As I read the record, three of the five board members said that all of the conditions were met.
That's not the way that they voted. And I don't believe that three of the five said that, but if that's the way it is, and I don't believe that it was determined which commissioner was talking at which time. So where it says a commissioner, that commissioner may have expressed a similar opinion later as they're wont to do.
Can I ask this, Mr. Young, and since we're talking about the record, what I noticed in listening, in fact, to the meeting, and the case law requires facts as a basis for the decision, it seemed like most of the discussion of the commissioners was drainage issues, depending on whether there's two rows of trees, the buffer, and those sorts of issues. And then I think one of the commissioners who did initially vote no was quite concerned that the township had disapproved, unlike apparently some other similar CUPs for solar gardens that have been previously approved by the board. I guess, and then what happened is, as you point out, there was the motion to approve. It was voted down on a roll call. Then there was a discussion. I think it was the voice, we don't know, of the environmental officer saying, well, you need to come up with a reason. And so they had the discussion after the vote, and he was asking the three dissenters, and almost leading them into the reason, because he's the one that then writes the letter. I guess my question is, when you look at the case law, it's a quasi-judicial kind of a process where you first receive the reasons, identify the reasons you vote no. Here it was after the fact. And so my question is, doesn't that at least suggest an arbitrary and capricious process where you have a result you want, and now afterwards you come up with the reasons to support it?
Actually, I believe that the voice that you're referring to as the environmentalist was my own. And I was advising that the county board that they had to state reasons on the record. And one of the ironies of representing local units of government is that you unfortunately get the answer first, and you come up with the reasons from what their discussions are and say, is this an accurate reflection of the reason that you have voted the way that you did? They didn't have reasons stated in their motion when the initial motion to approve what was offered. And I would have done the same thing had that motion passed, because you don't know where the chips are going to fall, and you don't know which reasons or what the majority are thinking when they make what their motion is and then vote upon that motion. That's just one of the anomalies of dealing with local units of government. And I'm sure that you face the same thing on the bench where you have panels of three or five or seven.
Mr. Young, it seems like you're making a distinction between what Judge Sleater called the quasi-judicial and what you're saying the reality is here. Judges, as you know, aren't passing motions. There isn't a statement that we vote in favor of or against. So maybe the process is a little different if, in a quasi-judicial respect, we're looking at reasons and then disposition. Here, the hands are raised or not on a disposition, so to speak. Would you agree that there's a distinction, or are you trying to say they're the same?
I'm not sure. What I would say is that when they make the motion, then what I do as their representative is, after they have a decision, say, now, is this the reason why you did what you did? And I help them formulate what those reasons are based upon the testimony that has been given. And in this case, you have the testimony of Ron Vorlachek and Ron Blazinski, both of whom are neighbors directly across the street. And I know that we're wont to call them lay witnesses, but really, with regard to their own property, they are probably more expert witnesses than anybody else. And I laid out, I believe it was on pages 8 through 10 of my brief, but essentially what both of them said to the county board, and what seemed to play a great deal of weight, is, if you had a choice to invest hundreds of thousands of dollars in your residence, would you rather have it near a open cornfield, or would you rather have it near a solar farm? Both of them said, this is common sense. This is not a thing that helps our value. It substantially hurts our value. And they both use the term common sense. And that's much like the Super America case in which the witnesses talked about the very problems in a similar way as lay witnesses to what Mr. Vorlachek and Mr. Blazinski talked of.
Mr. Young, I want to get to one of the findings, which was that the property is considered prime agricultural soil. And I'm trying to understand where that is a requirement in the zoning laws.
Your Honor, in the introduction to the agricultural zoning section, and I believe it's section 7, it says the purpose of this ordinance is to preserve prime ag land. And that is what our commissioners look to. I agree that there is no precedent that I'm aware of. We have had a similar issue come up before the Court of Appeals, and the court dealt with that on a different basis. And that was a Cecil Martin matter about 15 years ago.
But rezoning is different than denying a CUP.
It is. But it also applies to the issue of what is the purpose of an agricultural district. And it is to preserve agricultural land. Witness after witness said, these solar farms ought to go in places where you have poor farmland, unfarmable land.
Well, the farmer testified that it was hard to farm this particular knob, as he called it.
And the county board was free to give that great deal of credibility or very little credibility. That was the county board's option. And what
Mr. Young, I'm sorry. Oh, you finished your statement. I didn't mean to interrupt it.
Well, what is hard to farm for somebody with a 32 bottom plow is a whole lot different than what's hard to farm was from somebody with a 3 bottom plow. And so that's the context.
The question I have really goes more to the section 7 than in tying it in with what you're just saying. Would not, if the intention, and I'm familiar with the farmland in McLeod County, and anything that's tilled is pretty good farmland. So the point being, and I have seen some of these solar panels on my ride into the cities where it looks like wetland or it was something that was not farmed before. But that's not the way the ordinance is worded here. In other words, just about any place that's been tilled in McLeod County for which might otherwise be eligible for a solar farm or solar garden is the phrase I guess used is probably pretty good farmland, but that, am I correct? That's not really under subdivision 7. That's not a specification. And so wouldn't the county, that's going to shift its gear towards, we will not take any farmland out of use for solar, would have to identify that in its zoning ordinance.
Well, one would think that the purpose of a law, which is much like the title to a statute, is a part of that law. And a title to a statute is a part of that statute. So I agree it's not listed as one of the specific conditions for date denial. I acknowledge that. But can it be considered by the board when they're reading their entire ordinance as a whole? I believe that the answer is yes. And this is number one, is there evidence that there is a substantial likelihood of impairment of property values? I would respectfully ask the court to find that our county board of commissioners was reasonable in crediting the testimony of Mr. Vorlachek and of Mr. Blazinski. Now, I don't think that the board can or should deny just because a township official says we're against this. That's not a reasonable basis. It's in the record, but I don't believe that's what they relied on. What they relied on was the testimony of the neighboring landowners, the Vorlachek, the Blazinski, and the others that appeared. For the above reasons, Your Honors, we would respectfully ask that this court affirm that the decision of the McLeod County Board of Commissioners and in its denial of this conditional use permit. Thank you for your time.
Judge Sleater, Judge Bryant, do you have any more questions for Mr. Young? Thank you, Mr. Young. Mr. Kelly?
Thank you, Your Honor. And just to follow up on some of the questions Judge Bryant had before on property values, And, you know, I would point the court to the City of Barnum case, which is a published Court of Appeals decision, where the court held that neighbors' complaints about negative impact on values were insufficient, where no one offered any evidence regarding property values in the area of the proposed site or in any other area where similar projects had been built. And I think that was the point I was trying to make earlier in our questioning. And there's additional cases, I won't go into them, that are cited in the brief that I think establish that a neighbor expressing concern without more is not a sufficient basis for finding of substantial impairment or a denial of a conditional use permit. You know, I do think it's nice when you have an actual visual recording of the meeting, because I think if you watch the motion to approve and then how this, you know, application was treated, that the video is probably the best evidence of how arbitrary and capricious the board acted in denying the permit here. They're trying to add a requirement that's not a part of the statute. Even the general purpose statute that opposing counsel appointed today does not use the phrase prime agricultural soil or prime agricultural land. In addition, no one testified that this project would substantially impair property values. It's concern, as the reason stated. And I think the record's clear that the county didn't have a legally sufficient or a factual basis for their two reasons for denial. And under those circumstances, the court should reverse and have this permit issued. Thank you.
Thank you. The case is submitted, and we will render our decision within the statutory timeframe.